Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to dive into some NBA talk, and to help us do that, we bring in Jeff Zilgut from USA Today. Jeff, thanks for taking time to join us today, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, Robbie and Joe. Hope you guys are doing well.
Hope you are as well. And obviously, Jeff, over the weekend, a game of huge local interest here in Nashville with the Memphis Grizzlies taking on the Portland Trail Blazers. Obviously, Blazers get the big win in that game, and the Grizz fall short. But what did you make of the Grizz and their effort in the bubble, and also their future as they move forward with Ja Morant?
Well, look, I think if they have Jaren Jackson Jr. for the final five seeding games, that they do make the playoffs. And they possibly, even if they, you know, have the play-in game against Portland, possibly even with Jaren Jackson in that game, they win. And so I was pleased with a couple of things if you're a Grizzlies fan. That one, when they were down 30-14 in the first quarter, they just didn't crumble against a Portland team that was rolling with Damian Lillard. They're getting some healthy guys back, Yusuf Nurkic, Zach Collins, and obviously C.J. McCollum's a pretty solid guard as well. And then you start to look at this team for the future. I don't know if anyone thought that the Grizzlies would be in this position with Taylor Jenkins, first-year coach, taking this team to where he did. Now you have Ja Morant, who is my rookie of the year, and I think he'll win the award here soon when it's announced. You have Brandon Clark, and then you have a roster, and I mentioned Jaren Jackson Jr., and then you have a guy like Dylan Brooks, who I think really came into his own in this bubble as well. And so you start to look at the trajectory of this team, and you look at maybe where Taylor Jenkins has been and where player development has always been a key. You know, he coached under Mike Budenholzer. And you just look at what Budenholzer has done with a couple of teams. Now, I know people will say, well, you know, Mike Budenholzer had the Atlanta Hawks, best record in the NBA one year. He has the Milwaukee Bucks, and he, you know, does not have a finals appearance to show for it. I would just say that most of the time that he ran into the best player in the world during that era, and LeBron James, and his Milwaukee Bucks teams are on the verge right now. And the sort of capstone of all this, of a Mike Budenholzer-type squad and now Taylor Jenkins, is player development and putting guys in the right position, having a plan for them, getting them to play together for each other. And that's why I'm really bullish on this team. And I'm saying that considering, man, the Western Conference is super, super deep when you start to take a look around at teams with all the talent in the West. And that's something we've seen, you know, sort of cycle through over the past couple of decades, the West being much deeper. But we're starting to see it come through again right now.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jeff. I'm bullish on what Memphis could be. And still, with all that you just talked about, like, look at the playoff picture next year. I mean, it won't be easy. I look at them. I think Dylan Brooks had some great moments in the bubble. I also sometimes think, you know, Dylan Brooks in a little bit reduced, maybe six-man kind of role might suit him better. And if they could find that dynamite wing that I know Memphis has been looking for a long time, going back to the last group of players, you know, core that had them really competitive. What do you think is realistic for them in terms of free agency and luring someone to come play with Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson and really giving them a bump up?
So, look, first of all, let's just start off with this year's free agent class is not very good. And that's no slight. I mean, it just doesn't have the name in star power as, you know, a Kevin Durant or a Kyrie Irving being a free agent or anything like that, or, you know, Jimmy Butler. And also, you know, this is just going to be such an anomaly of a free agent year. It's going to come quick right after the season. And, you know, the next season is going to start relatively soon. Now, we don't have a date on it. Now, in the big picture, I always find it's really difficult, and this is tough for teams in these markets to sort of deal with, is, you know, Milwaukee, they drafted Giannis Antetokounmpo. Cleveland got LeBron James, one, in a draft, and then two, he came back by the very nature of that's where he's from. And so, you know, you have to maybe look at more of a team, and Joe knows this, is a Detroit Pistons of that sort of 2000s era where, yeah, they had some really good players. I don't know who was a Hall of Famer among Richard Hamilton and Chauncey Billups and Steve Wallace and Ben Wallace. Those are the kinds of things and players that you're going to need in Memphis. I have a hard time seeing like a super, super big name free agent coming. But with that said, when you do have the pieces like Ja Morant and a Jaren Jackson Jr., can you start to look at a guy who's an all-star in the vein of a Chris Middleton, who is a great two-way player, can give you buckets on the offensive end, knows how to play defense, and I think that's the model Grizzlies are going to have to follow to get that sort of dynamic wing that you're talking about right there. It might not be the big name or flashy name, but it's certainly someone who is an all-star. Look, at the All-Star game, Chris Middleton's there. At his podium, it's usually the fewest people. But by no means does that indicate, you know, that the fewest people talking to him, but by no means does it indicate, you know, that he's not an All-Star. And so I think that's the route that Memphis would have to take.
Jeff Zilgert from USA Today on the line with us. And, Jeff, we've talked about Damian Lillard. When he's cooking like he's cooking right now and he's at the top of his game, how many players in the league can do what he does?
There's not many scorers like that. You know, I think Kevin Durant, when he gets going like that and Kevin makes it look so effortlessly, you know, he's in that category right there. I think sometimes, you know, you get – and he doesn't happen as often, but another guard who can do that and get buckets like that is Kyrie Irving when he gets going. I don't think Kyrie has quite the range that Damian Lillard does. But I've seen Kyrie, you know, pour it on in short spurts. And even, you know, I think earlier this year, season opener, Kyrie put up a 50-point game for Brooklyn. And so he has that ability. But Damian seems to also be able to do it at such a sustained level, game after game. And I think in that first half, you guys are watching, you know, Damian didn't shoot the ball particularly well. And they sort of relied on Jusuf Nurkić to create points more so than their guards. And then in the second half, you just see him start to light it up. And then he gets, you know, you get those buckets in a short span. And so those are just a couple names that I see right now in the league who can do it like that. And there doesn't seem to be much that the opposing team can do. Look, when you're pulling up from that logo, I know it extends just a little bit beyond half court, but when you're pulling up from that, I mean, that's almost you can't defend that. I mean, there's really no reason to guard a guy 40 feet from the basket like that. And Damian has the speed, if you decide to do that, to blow by him. I mean, so he's playing. You know, I don't know if he's an underrated superstar. I think people inside the league know what he can do. But I think during this bubble action, he's certainly shown that, you know, he's maybe a little bit more of an all-NBA player than people gave him credit for.
Yeah, and then, you know, Carmelo can hit a corner three when you need a big shot, and then you can just ISO C.J. McCollum and let him, you know, take over late in a game like that. Am I crazy, Jeff, to think that they could at least make this fun with the Lakers?
I think so. My biggest concern with them right now is how exhausted they are. And, you know, I'm going to borrow this from a Twitter user. I can't remember whose name it is right now, so I apologize out there to the Twitter sphere. But, you know, while Damian Lillard makes offense look effortlessly, he almost is effortlessly sometimes on defense. And that's a little bit of my concern with Portland. I mean, both those teams were in the high 80s, if not 90s. At the end, was it 90, 86 end of the third quarter?
So
Portland doesn't play a lot of defense. I'm a little concerned with their depth. The Lakers have had their struggles inside the bubble, and so that's a little bit of my concern. So to get to your point, Joe, I think that they can make it fun and entertaining. I'm not sure that this is a series they can win. I know lots of people are thinking, and look, this is not a traditional 1-8 matchup. I'll say that. With Zach Collins and Yusuf Nurkic back healthy, you know, don't forget, Portland made the conference finals last year, and they played without those two players for most of the year. And so I understand why they weren't a higher seed during the regular season. So it's not normal. I think it's more like a 1-5 kind of matchup, a 1-4 matchup. But, again, being gassed like they are, and the Lakers playing for the big picture, again, they're going to have to get into it fast, the Lakers. They had some horrible offense in the bubble, shooting-wise, points per possession, three-point shooting, free throw percentage. Anthony Davis was uneven. And so they have some work to do, and they would probably have preferred a much easier opponent than coming in against an all-NBA player like Damian Lillard. Again, for all the reasons I'm trying to lay out, I just don't see Portland winning the series. But making it entertaining and fun, I can certainly see that, even if it's a five-game series. I've always felt that some five-game series, can be very entertaining with the right two teams.
Jeff, I want to ask you quickly about Kawhi Leonard, because you watch him play offensively, and he's a great player, but he doesn't really do anything to blow you away. But I think the Clippers have a great chance to win the championship this year. And if he wins a championship, his third championship with three different teams, and wins a finals MVP again, how does that affect where we start to talk about Kawhi Leonard in terms of the all-time greats of the game?
Yeah, it's really difficult, because I think his personality contributes to the fact that, look, I know he's got the New Balance deal and everything, but we don't see him in lots of ads. I don't want to say he's not friendly with the media, but he certainly doesn't make himself available like some players do. And so I think our evaluation of him is a little skewed, but when you're adding up the things that we're talking about, does that make him ultimately, by the end of his career, a top 10 player all time? I mean, that's the territory that he's approaching. And when you talk about his offense, there's another guy who, he doesn't do anything flashy, but it's just real fundamentally sound and very difficult to stop. He knows how to get to a spot on the offensive end of the floor. And his defense, I mean, he's been a defensive stopper for his entire career. And I do like the Clippers a lot. Now, my only big concern about them is they have not had a ton of time together. Montrezl Harrell is still not back inside the bubble mourning his grandmother's death, and the Clippers said they don't know when he's going to be back. And the way they managed this team this year, trying to give players both rest and develop continuity, was a fine line. And now that we have just this awkwardness of almost a new season, that's my concern with the Clippers. But your points on Kawhi are spot on.
So, Jeff, quickly, what's your favorite series of the first round? What are the one you're most interested in watching?
Houston, Oklahoma City pops up to me. That obviously the Portland Lakers one for the Damian factor. Philadelphia in Boston is another one that shoots up on my radar. And then the 3-6 with the Rocky Mountain special between Utah and Denver should be another one. Those are the ones that I'm really interested in. But that Houston-OKC one, OKC's been really solid with Billy Donovan all season long, and that's why he's getting a lot of mention for Coach of the Year.
Jeff Zilgut from USA Today has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Jeff, thanks for joining us, man, as always. We really appreciate it.
Hey, you guys take care, Robbie Joe.
Right, absolutely. Thanks, Jeff. When we come back, we'll dive into the Grizzlies a little bit, recap their loss to Portland, what it means for them moving forward, and also look ahead at some NBA first-round playoff action as well. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Marquise Munson taking you through this Monday morning. That was a tough one for the Grizz on Saturday. I thought they had it. They were leading in the fourth quarter coming down the stretch. Grayson Allen gets that technical foul, which I thought was ridiculous. First off, it wasn't even a common foul. And then you got to, like, if you're a ref in that situation, you got to realize the environment that you're in. First off, there's no fans, so you're going to hear everything they say. Secondly, it's late in the fourth quarter in a play-in game, which is essentially a playoff game. You just got to let some things go, man. Just, yeah, they're going to say something to you from time to time. It was an awful call. It wasn't a foul. It's just let things go.
It was a
clean, NBA officials drive me nuts.
Yeah, well, it was a clean block, so he had beef. But you also, to what you just said there, as a player, you got to realize that too. You got to realize that now.
That's true.
You can't mutter stuff under your breath. And frankly, if you got to face that punchable, man, you
got
to know that too.
Yeah, I got to tell
you. Now, if you're that punchable.
He does have a punchable face.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for you. That was a big moment. You know, John Morant, there were a few possessions where they were kind of in control. And John Morant was fantastic. 35 points, 8 assists. There were a couple possessions, though, where, like, maybe a bounce pass works, but he gets a pass deflected and turns it over. Those are big moments. 8 turnovers is too many in that situation. So he's still got some growth. Marquise tweeted at some point, I think after that game, like, Nashville should embrace the Grizzlies. Now, I'm on board with that. I feel like Memphis and Nashville should like each other's, you know, hockey and basketball teams. And
I agree, but there's a beef there. I don't know why there's a beef there, but there is.
Like I understand that. When I first moved here, I was like, how come there, like, people don't support the Grizzlies out here? I like basketball. A lot of young people like basketball. There's a lot of young people in Nashville. How come? And then it's just like this beef history between Memphis and Nashville. And I was just like, come on now, this is not Auburn, Alabama, and Tuscaloosa. Let's kind of separate this and support one another. Like,
I agree.
And we're on the same. They're on the same sporting network. Fox Sports Tennessee, yeah. Like, let's just be one team Tennessee. Like, you got an NBA team technically with the Grizzlies, and you got a star within a conference that you are well aware of. You know, so, you know, I think they should just embrace them.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it goes back to the Titans thing, right?
That's a big part of it.
I went down to Memphis and did a Grizzlies game and tried to get into that a little bit, talking to people down there about that whole thing. Because obviously there's that, there's the Titans, they sort of, you took them on. Nashville beats them out. Nashville has been consistently beating them out for things, has surpassed Memphis as a city. So there's like that city rivalry, which is fine. I guess, you know, Pittsburgh and Philly people, do they root for each other? Probably never.
They do not.
But they also have more teams.
Yeah, like, they play against each other.
Yeah, right.
The Preds are not playing a hockey team from Memphis.
That's the thing. If you've got only one team in a particular league, then I say, why not embrace it? I do remember when the Preds made their run, I know in Knoxville it was going nuts.
I went on a couple shows in Memphis during that run, too. But it wasn't nearly the same.
There was a little bit of noticing in Memphis.
Yeah.
One thing that I did hear from people, and this, I think it was like in February, I wrote a comment about this, but though the Titans are on way more in Memphis now than they used to be. Now, some of that actually has to do with Derrick Henry, because Derrick Henry, there's Alabama fans over there. People love Alabama. So that, and it's
there's
just
a lot of Rams
it's been
fans
long enough
in Memphis, too, because you're not that far away from St. Louis.
Right.
And now that they're gone, I'm sure that has something to do with it as well. But yeah, I have noticed that, too.
So the thing is, you wonder if a guy like John Morant here can make an impact where people are like, man, I mean, he's an OVC guy, so there's some familiarity with him, and he's just this new superstar there. Maybe you feel like it's time to turn a page and embrace a team. Why not?
He's well on his way. I'm not going to say he's there yet, because I don't think he's over Derrick Henry at this point. He is well on his way to becoming the biggest sports star in the state of Tennessee, John Morant. I mean, I don't think that's crazy to say. I think he's certainly on his way to becoming that.
So you've got him blowing past Derrick Henry.
I mean, eventually. I mean, he's 21, so he's eventually going to get there.
Well, yeah, I mean, in a few years.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's there right now.
One will be in his prime, and one, probably won't be playing.
Right.
So if we were to say the three, let's say, Derrick Henry, Pecorine, Roman Josi, John Morant, that'll be four, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, I would probably put.
I mean, we're obviously just doing pro.
Yeah.
Because, sometimes you'd have, a Peyton Manning in the state or something like that.
Absolutely. But as far as pro sports is concerned, those gotta be the four. I don't know who would be five at that point. Maybe Tannehill.
I was gonna say.
Like he's been here maybe, a year though.
I still think about football. Like I do think about a guy like Kevin Byard, but that's sort of. I mean, that's still like more like Titans fans love him, but
and
yeah. In the
to be
state,
honest with you, like, and this maybe not be, it may be Taylor Lewan, just because could popularity
be.
Purposes
could
though.
Be,
not like I mean, Talon is on the field. He was a Pro Bowler before, but as far as like the popularity outside of football, I think gives him over the hump at least for a top five.
The bros love Taylor Lewan.
Yes, the bro, yeah, especially on Saturdays because they're usually for them. So. They love some Taylor Lewan. So I would say Taylor Lewan 5.
But like it's not crazy to think that in the next 5 years, Ja Morant could be one of the best two or three point guards in the game.
Yeah.
And right. two or three point guards in the game, that's pretty high star power.
If he keeps on this, if this is a sign of things to come, then I think you're going to be right that he'll be one of the top stars in the league, which automatically makes him the top star in Tennessee. In the short term, Derrick Henry, if he keeps building on what he did last year, then he is certainly like he's the guy people look at with the Titans. I think they now have the face of the franchise and around the league, what he did in the playoffs, he's elevated a lot.
Yeah, so, no, I totally agree.
But it's a short it's a window here. It's a 2-3 year window probably. And by then Ja Morant. Of course, then the Grizzlies have to keep Ja Morant, too. There's all that as part of it,
sure.
too. Is he going to want to play his whole career there? Some of that's probably going to have to do with what they put around him.
All right, so as y'all look at the NBA playoff bracket, what are a couple of series that jump off the page at you? Because I'll start. I agree. I'm going to put myself on record right now with Jeff Zilgit. The Thunder are going to beat the Rockets in the first round. You heard it here first. I know the Rockets are the favorite. The Thunder are going
to
win.
The former Thunder star is going down to the Thunder.
He's going down.
Huh?
The Thunder are going to win against the Rockets.
It's Chris Paul's on that Thunder team.
I'm aware.
So Chris Paul's bad luck.
Russell Westbrook is bad luck, too. I'm here to tell you.
It's like the two teams that got – two of the players that got bad luck in the playoffs. And also, like, James Harden, he turns into a completely different player. Like, his turnover rate goes up in the playoffs. Like, it's
he tries to do too much.
He tries to do too much in the playoffs. It's pretty bad. So – I mean, I would not be surprised. Look, Shai Alexander is – we talk
good.
About a guy who's going to – like a guard that's going to be the future of the league. He's one of those guys. Like, he's a star, easily a star. So, I can see the Thunder winning in 7, but I'm still going to go Rockets. But I can definitely see the Thunder winning it.
I'm honestly excited about Portland Lakers, even though I agree with Zilgit that it's not going to go to 7 or be – and the Lakers are too much. They can't guard them. I'm also really excited about Dallas Clippers, even though, again, I think the Clippers are going to handle them. But it's going to be fun to watch because Luka Doncic is so fun to watch. And I still think those are games I don't want to miss. So those are two series that I might be most excited about, the basketball that we get to watch, even though I don't think the results are going to be that close.
Why are my Heat and the Pacers not getting any love? You want to see some two teams that hate each other. Watch the Pacers and the Heat, for God's sake.
But, see, I think it's calmed down a little bit.
It has.
I think Warren is a good story.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler is, like, you know, selling coffee in the NBA bubble. He's selling coffee for, like, $20 in the bubble. I don't know why, but whatever.
Because he's Jimmy Butler.
Got to get your hustle on. But, you know, that's going to be a good series. That's probably the one series in the first round of the East that I'm looking forward to. Like, I know Jeff said 76ers and Celtics. I don't think that's going to be a good series at all.
I think Celtics are going to smoke
especially with Joel Embiid being probably the only bright spot of that 76ers team.
That's the problem.
Like, they're paying Tobias Harris a bunch of money to be Jimmy Butler, but he's not Jimmy Butler. So, that's not – the three games outside of Heat Pacers in the East are going to be awful. They're probably all ending within 4 or 5 games. And so that's – I'm not excited for it. I'm excited for every series in the West with the exception of Rockets and Thunder because I think James Harden's going to look awful and it's going to be an awful series.
So who do you think is going to win that series?
I think the Rockets will still win.
Yeah.
But James, look, he just looks – he looks like a completely different player in the playoffs. I remember one playoff game where he had a triple-double because he had like 11 turnovers.
Yeah.
and it was that bad. And I think this was a game – again. I want to say it was against the Clippers back when they had Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan. Like, he was awful.
Yeah.
And so, and that's kind of been the story of his playoff life. And Westbrook's kind of the same way, although Westbrook does have some bright spots, like when that Thunder series against the Warriors before KD defected. Yeah. Like,
before Klay took them apart in game six, they should have won. See, the thing is, I will defend Harden and all that because some of that came against the Warriors. When sometimes when those guys get cooking, like you almost have to do too much. Like the way the Rockets played in that game, they could have beat them. Yeah. They fell apart, but a part of that is the Warriors just saying, "Nah, we're too much for you."
But see, we have to think about this too. If we're going to use the same excuse, and Jeff even mentioned it, of this is why Giannis and Mike Budenholzer has not been able to get to the finals. You kind of have to say the same thing about the Western Conference of, like, this is why guys like James Harden and Damian Lillard and all these guys don't get the opportunity to go to the NBA Finals because the Warriors dominated half of the year. Same thing with Cleveland. Cleveland dominated half of the decade. So, like, you got to kind of cut James Harden some slack there, even though he's had plenty of opportunities to prove otherwise.
All right, so
I'm going to put us on the spot quickly. Who do you have winning the championship? As we begin play here in NBA playoffs starting today, who wins the championship? I am going with the LA Clippers. I just think their depth is too much. I think they win. I think Kawhi wins his third championship with three different teams, and I think he wins finals MVP.
Same.
Yeah, I'm gonna
we're all three going Clippers?
I
did not expect that.
They will continue to never win anything.
Even like, well, here's the cliche, defense wins championships. And we talk about with this Blazer series of who's going to guard LeBron, who's going to guard Anthony Davis. Well, when you look at that Clippers team, they got players that can guard all those positions.
Yeah.
Montrezl Harrell can guard Anthony Davis. You know, Kawhi or Paul George both can guard
LeBron.
So it's like, you shut down your two best players. And same thing with the finals. Who's going to guard Giannis and Chris Middleton? Yeah, it's going to be Kawhi and Paul George. They're two best players on defense on that end, or maybe even Patrick Beverley. So it's defense wins championships, and they got too much depth on scoring, so I'm going to go Clippers. And this is coming from a Laker fan. I think it's going to be Clippers in seven against the Lakers.
We'll have to see. NBA playoffs starting tonight. Really looking forward to that. When we come back, we'll dive back into some college football and assess our confidence level that the SEC schedule that's being announced later today actually takes place. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, we were talking earlier in the show about the madness that is the world of college football. The SEC announcing, I believe, week one of the schedule on Paul Feinbaum's show later today, and then later tonight coming out with the entire schedule. So looking forward to that we'll have actual football games, hopefully, to look forward to. I'm really hoping, Joe, that we don't pull a Big Ten here and all of a sudden the schedule comes out and then like a few days later it's like, by the way, that schedule we released, it's not happening. We're pulling the plug on the whole thing.
Yeah, well, look, it won't be soon if the plug is pulled. They're going to go, I think, as long as they can go. Remember, we were talking earlier about the Big Ten, which totally botched it. I mean, everybody can agree, just the messaging, they weren't transparent enough. I mean, they've got parents and players and coaches all still trying to fight them and bring it back.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, their schedule, which I thought was better than the SEC because it was early, their schedule was September 5th. So they are on a different timeline from the SEC in terms of, okay, practice now, schedule starts. They were a 3-week difference in their season started. So you got to keep that in mind on the timing. But the SEC, if they do pull the plug, one, you better have something more than the Big Ten had to tell your players. I mean, that's where you start. You like, okay, this is what we're looking at for the spring. I mean, the Big Ten, you got Jeff Broms out there like trying to scramble and put together a spring schedule idea for the Big, like no one has anything like other than, yeah, we hope so. I mean, if you're the SEC right now, you better be fleshing out while you're trying to figure this out, while you're trying to see if you can play. You better also be fleshing out a spring season. I do reject the idea that you can't do it. You have to push back 2021. You have to cut it down. I mean, NFL teams, I know it's not the pros, but NFL teams play more than 20 often in just a fall, 20 plus football games. So, but anyway, the fall itself, like I said, Robbie, give it this 2 weeks of there's no way they're going to do anything. They're going to try to push forward. And let's just see how it looks with students on these campuses.
That's what I keep going back to in this. And this is where I think the point that Justin Fields and a lot of these players bring up makes sense. Because if you're bringing all these kids back to school and they're going to be on campus, we've talked about the risks that come along with that. You know, the players themselves are not going to be at any less of a risk, in my opinion, if they don't play than they are going to be if they do play, given the fact that they will still be on campus, they'll still be around other kids, they'll still be subjected to doing things that other college kids do. So I think the point that Justin Fields and a lot of these players have brought up is, look, I feel safer with my team being at the facility all the time than I would feel otherwise not being here, going off doing my own thing and being on campus in another fashion. So that's the part that is confusing to me that we keep going back to is, if you cancel the season and you still have school, are these players really less in danger? I would argue no. Like that part of it has never made sense to me.
No, the people in charge just aren't responsible for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the answer.
That's what it boils down to.
But I will say that you still, if you got piles of bodies, probably increases your risk a little bit, right? You're piling up some bodies on a field. I mean, I'm guessing you're increasing the risk. But, yeah, overall, Justin Fields had a good answer there. You know, he was asked, it was Jay Williams asking him, what about the long-term risk? You know, there's a lot we don't know. It's affecting people differently. I'm paraphrasing, and that's what he says. Basically, we feel safer in this environment playing the game than just being out there. And it's a fair point. And, of course, if you could actually bubble things, if you actually could have had some sort of a plan to actually separate the college football players from the student body, which you could have done at significant cost and while admitting that they're not regular students, which we all know.
Right.
Then you'd probably be in a different position now too. I would advise anyone to read the story that Seth Emerson and Josh Kendall did. It's a Q&A with the SEC medical chief, and that's not an official title. I will find her name, but it's a really interesting conversation and a lot of questions about, look, the Big Ten came up with this conclusion, the Pac-12, so why is yours different? And I think the overall answer to all that is, it's just not as simple as, I mean, one study says something, you know, she said, we believe we can protect against the myocarditis, which of course can be tied to a lot of different viruses.
Right.
But her biggest concern, and the reason she wouldn't say she's optimistic, is what's happening in the communities. What's happening now with the kids packing together, going out,
right,
going to places. You got Alabama people tweeting stuff about what's going on here. Tuscaloosa, you want Alabama football or you're not acting like it? That's the biggest concern. And if the numbers come back here in a few weeks where I fear they will, then I think the schedule we see tonight is going to end up being invalidated.
Yeah, and look, I asked you earlier in the show, and I've been thinking about it, is the way the SEC has gone about this in terms of continuing to push forward, continuing to wait before they make any sort of drastic decisions like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten made. They're coming out with their schedule tonight. Has that influenced the way at all that you think in terms of this season being played or at least being attempted to start in the fall? I don't know if I've come up with an answer on that yet. I think it's as simple as the SEC is waiting as long as it could possibly wait before they are forced to make a decision one way or the other if they're going to play or not.
Exactly. And as soon as the Big Ten did that, I was like, you're going to hear some bold proclamations from around here about football, because no one in the SEC wants to be perceived as following the lead of the Big Ten.
No.
And certainly not on a decision this unpopular. So we've seen that, and we're continuing to see it. And tonight, it's a big to-do on the schedule. I'm confident this is not going to be 5 days later, and the SEC's like, all right, never mind. That's not happening. It's going to go. You're right. I agree with you. It's a lot of it is as simple as go to the last possible second. But also, in that last possible second, you want to see data that helps your case to play. There's also the saliva direct test, which got approved by the FDA. This could be big for all sports. an affordable test that is more accurate in theory, and it's instant, and you know, you can do, I mean, this is the type of thing that you can put on sports events and not have to worry about the lag time. And we just had a game, and you know, five people we didn't know had the virus just spread it to everybody in that pile of bodies. So this is big, and this is another thing. When that came out, I did have the thought, like, well, Big Ten, here's some information that could have been useful to you.
Yeah.
You know,
but again, like you said, I mean, they're operating. What, September 5th was the start date? I mean,
yeah, they were operating
3 weeks away,
right? They were operating on a different timeline, and they had kids out on the field a little bit. And it's like, how much are you letting these teams practice? I mean, they're starting today. Vanderbilt's going today. Tennessee, real practice. How much are you going to let those teams practice and prepare for a season, and then, you know, pull the plug on them? I mean, unfortunately, there's definitely a possibility that they go a few weeks here and then it gets taken away. Again, if that's the case, man, you better come with something better than the Big Ten did.
If you're Vanderbilt, I'm not going to say that they're hoping for the season not to happen, because I think that's unfair. But you look at the situation they're going to be in if the season does happen. They've had like five or six guys already opt out. Some of them some really big-name players. I think Demetri Moore opted out. They're a team that really isn't that stacked on talent to begin with. You mentioned you saw them go to a conference-only schedule, and 0-10 comes to mind. Like, if you're Vanderbilt at the end of the day, is it really the worst thing if you don't play this season? Because it's probably not going to go well if you do.
No. And why couldn't we get Vanderbilt Arkansas? You know, because they had to be like fodder for other teams.
No, that's not what we wanted. No.
Oh, that's right. It was Vanderbilt Bama is what we wanted.
Yes. No, they wanted Bama too. We wanted each other. Game of the century.
A rematch of that 2017 classic in Nashville.
Absolutely. I like to remake classics. Sometimes they work out pretty well.
Yeah. I'm gonna go find my tweets from that day. Alabama fans attacked me. Some of your people, because I dared to say that Tua might take Jalen Hurts' job at some point.
And yeah.
I got attacked by Alabama fans.
That was a hot button subject out there. You really couldn't. It's kind of like politics. You're either one side or the other with Jalen and Tua. It's pretty sad, actually, because they're just two college
kids.
You
can be both.
I can like both.
A whole bunch of people switched sides that year.
Yeah, they did.
I was like, I like both. I'm like, they're both good. Like, no, you got to pick one. I'm like, no, I don't. Not really. And they're both like human beings that play quarterback at Alabama. Like, just like them all.
Yeah, you can have more than one good player.
Yeah, it's like, oh, only like one quarterback. I'm like, okay, well, that's your prerogative. I like both.
Everything's got to be like political parties. Pick one side.
When we come back, we'll dive back into the Titans discussion and wrap up the show. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode. Joe, we hit a lot of Titans in this show. It's that time. Pads going on today, man.
That's right.
I'm excited about it.
Pads popping. And start learning a little bit more about this team that we will not get to learn in any preseason game. So these full contact practices are very meaningful.
All right, so Al, in a typical NFL season, how would you rate the give-a-crap level in terms of players hitting each other, how hard they hit each other on their own team, and how differently do you expect that to look this year, given the fact that there are no preseason games?
Well, that's the thing. There's a big difference when you're talking about guys trying to fight for jobs and trying to have a career in football. When you have a 53-man roster and you're going through a season and everybody's paid and they're on the team, and it's very – you're going to way lighten up once games start. I mean, my gosh. I mean, I still think, like, the Thursday game is just inhumane,
yeah,
given the beating these guys take on Sundays. So it's – totally night and day, even in a normal year, camp to season. But then I think this camp will be quite a bit different than your normal camp, because these are your games. I think you often have been getting these really good two-day practices with other teams. More and more teams love doing that. The Titans have been doing it. They did, was it Patriots last year?
Patriots last year.
Bucks year before that. Yep.
All the Tom Brady teams.
So that's all out. Yeah, exactly. So that's all out. So it's just, you got to get a lot done with the pads on, and this is how guys are proving themselves. More live special team stuff. You know, a lot of times you don't see a lot of live special teams other than in the preseason games. That's where you really get evaluations. I think you're going to see it. You have to. You're going to have to really run it live in practice now with your own guys, which puts some people you probably don't want to put at risk, but you got to make evaluations.
What are you most looking forward to as they start moving into some padded practices? Because I think the easy answer is, how are the rookies going to respond? Specifically, how is Darrington Evans going to respond? Getting hit. He had some fumbling issues yesterday without really getting hit. I mean, people just swatting at the ball. That's going to be the biggest thing. Who is able to hold on to the ball? Who's not?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what I'm looking for is obvious, but hey, I'm Captain Obvious.
That's okay.
So, Darrington Evans, how's he respond to fumbling twice yesterday? Christian Fulton, is he tackling people? You know, Isaiah Wilson, when he's out there, how does he look in full contact? Larrell Murchison, a guy really they need to emerge as a rotational guy in that defensive line. I mean, a lot. So these are the rookies you're looking for. And again, I'll mention Chris Jackson, a guy who I noticed yesterday for sure. DeAndre Walker, he's getting a look. You know, Kamale Correa is out right now. Vic Beasley is out right now. And still hasn't passed his physical. So DeAndre Walker, who missed his rookie season, is getting even a better look than he would have at this time. How's he look rushing the passer? You know, there's a lot of guys when the contact starts that you want to see. I mean, you know what Kevin Byard can do and what Rashawn Evans can do and Taylor Lewan can do. So, yeah, Darrington Evans, and there's another one, by the way, Saros Saros. It's Darrington Evans, and I say because when you read the name, you read Darren.
Darren,
and
yes.
And Ton, but it is Darrington. Big day for him today to come
I'm
back
I'm proud of myself
that,
for saying it right.
You have been consistently saying it right. Man. I'm like 50% at best. This is a big day for him to come out there and show something while he's taking real hits.
All right, so quickly, Vingan is throwing a self-promotion party on your phone. So let's get to it. We mentioned earlier in the show, I was talking about the Predators' moves that David Poile could make, and we've talked about Turris, maybe buying him out, not bringing back Smith and Granlund. We think that's very much a possibility. I mentioned maybe the possibility of moving on from a guy like Yarncroak, who had an okay year. He was fine. He's not that expensive, but I just think his position and his role on the team could be better served by bringing in somebody younger, like a Trennan. Maybe even a Blackwell, putting him in there. Maybe even a Rem Pitlick, somebody like that. What do you think of that idea, and what are maybe some other moves that you/Vingan believe could be on the table?
Well, Vingan has a piece up at The Athletic today on different moves they could make. I mean, I could just read the whole thing, but he's got different tiers, people who aren't going anywhere, who probably aren't going anywhere, and then a list of free agents and his list of suggested moves. He's got Yarncroak and Sissons as a move. You know, to follow up with your point from earlier on, the idea that Yarncroak, versatile, cheap, but could a young guy give you more payoff? Austin Watson is another one who, $1.5 million cap hit, a guy who certainly fell off, was a healthy scratch a lot last year. I thought, he definitely played well in training camp, got on the ice for the postseason, but you could look there too if you're looking to go younger. You know, but I still think if you look at his aren't going anywhere, okay, Josi and Pekarinen, that's all he's got.
Sure.
The probably not, see, that's where in that group, somewhere in that group, you might see someone who we would say, we would all agree, probably, but I'm leaving the door open because I just feel like if David Poile is going to make any kind of real significant move, it's got to be someone from that category.
Yeah. Like I said, I think everybody's pretty much on the table except Josi and Pekarinen, and that's because they have no movement clauses.
I'd say Duchesne too, but
I would say so, but I'm not going to rule it out.
Man, that would be
it was pretty disappointing year.
Yeah, but that would be you think about what you're saying.
What you've taken,
David Poile? Yeah. What are you saying if you do that?
I know.
I don't know. I mean, I think Duchesne fans may have had an unrealistic expectation for him. But David Poile knows exactly what he is. And has been. And I think if you're David Poile, you can look at it and say, we got to get the right pieces around him, and he should be able to flourish. That's why you sign a guy to a long deal like that.
Yeah, no question about it. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm not going to just outright say it's not going to happen. Because I would be surprised. I don't know if I'd be shocked.
Was there a person in the world who threw out like Shea Weber being traded after the 2016 season ended?
Not
like
many.
Did even anyone throw it out as
no.
a scant possibility?
Now, believe it or not, I did talk about it with Ryan Porth a week before it happened. Because
did you?
Those were the rumors, like Subban was floating around there.
Okay, so it was based on
like,
rumors.
It was
though.
Based on rumors. I was like, would you do it? Would you trade Weber for Subban?
What was the answer?
Yes. And it happened a week later.
And it
believe me
out.
Or don't believe me, but it was it happened.
Shea Weber looks good right now, but
I was at Six Flags over Texas. Know exactly where I was.
Wouldn't you love to be back at Six Flags over Texas?
I really
right
would.
Now?
It would be great. That's going to do it for us today. Rex Road, good show.
You too, buddy.
Looking forward to the Titans get back in pads today. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.